Welcome to the Recruitment Flex with Serge and Shelly. I'm Serge.
And I'm Shelly. And we talk all things recruitment starting right now.
Bonjour and welcome to the Recruitment Flex. Shelly, I feel very lucky today because I am surrounded by not one, but three very smart, intelligent, and gorgeous ladies. I'm really excited to bring them on the show.
Yes, Serge, it is just another day in paradise for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be surrounded by women. And so let me get right to it. I'd like to introduce Tracy Lovejoy and Shannon Lucas. They are co-founders of Catalyst Constellations and co-authors of the book, Move Fast, Break Shit, and Burn Out. Welcome to the show, Shannon and Tracy.
Thank you so much for having us.
Mm-hmm. So for the audience that has not read your book or maybe heard you speak before, can I start with the lovely, the talented Tracy Lovejoy? What a great last name.
I do love my last name. It's my maiden name. And when I got married, I didn't change it because very near and dear to my heart. My background, really, I think of myself as having two primary identities outside of being a very lucky co-CEO with Shannon. My background originally came out of research. And so I was a student of anthropology. I moved directly into the tech world where I got to bring my love of studying people and culture into innovation. Once I was doing that, what I saw in my love of studying people was that I just as much loved studying the people directly in front of me within my workplace as I did going out and studying people in the actual research projects. And that's where I landed into coaching. And so I had gone into coaching to make myself a better leader while I was leading research teams in-house. And I had that thing you hear of, like, you hear the angels, the sky parts, and it was like, this is a calling. That's what it felt like, which is really, that sounds lovely. People long for it, but it's incredibly disruptive when you have a career path. And so it was not an easy choice to say, I'm going to leave a cushy job in tech and go and hang a shingle. When I was about 40, I had a moment saying, what am I going to be proud to tell my kids I made a decision of at this age? And I couldn't deny that working with people to make their lives better was what I loved. And so once I got out, I was still a researcher. And so who do I want to do this with? And I started figuring that out, researching it. And when I looked at the favorite clients I'd had over time, what I saw was they all had these similar traits. People who have this just innate drive to make the world around them better. People who would set these goals that were big and audacious. And even they would think they were ridiculous sometimes when they'd say it. And I took that as a starting point to go and study these folks more and finally had someone name it for me to say, I'm a catalyst. And I was like, yeah, you are. That's what this category of person is. And so that really became the beautiful dance that brought Shannon and I together, because Shannon was one of the people that I was working with. She was an ultra catalyst, obviously. And I was interviewing her for the research. And I'm going to jump in and turn it over to Shan, because this is where our story begins.
This is where our story intersects. And the reason that I had hired Tracy was because I was 4 years into a career at Vodafone building out a global innovation program, and I was burning out. And I was burning out, even though by any definition of an innovation program in an enterprise, we were crushing it. Tens of millions in your pipeline, products to market, completely changing how we engaged with our customers. But the core of the program for us was finding people that we called the positive troublemakers. Then we branded them innovation champions around the world. And our goal was to not have an ivory tower of innovation, but really build this muscle across the organization, stop reinventing the wheel, give them a shared language, accelerate the impact. Over the 4 years, we had grown it from 8 people to over 100 certified innovation champions, but it was always about like 30% that was leaning in. And I spent all of my time trying to sort of catalyze or activate the other 70%, and I couldn't figure it out. And because we were so successful, I had every tool at my disposal: rewards, CEO sponsorship, training, gamification. And so I got a coach, and that coach is my now amazing co-CEO, Tracy Lovejoy. And so as we were working together and she shared that readout of what it meant to be a catalyst, it was like, holy shit, I feel so seen. And this just contextualizes that thing that defined me. You know, whether I was a network engineer, I was a student, I was doing technical sales, it was always about trying to improve the things around me and help those around me do the same. And it just became really clear, is this is a category of people who are going to make the world better, but organizations don't understand them and they often don't understand themselves. And pretty early on, we're like, we need to write the personal operating manual for these people so that they can self-identify and understand themselves better. We co-wrote the book that I needed 20 years ago. I stayed in the corporate world for a couple more years because I had a couple more innovation hypotheses, but the goal was in 2020 to come together to write the book. And now we have the good fortune of having identified a customer profile that happens to be some of the most amazing people to work with in the world.
I'm going to have a lot of questions on the co-CEO thing and how that works. Mm-hmm. But before we get there, I'm curious. I didn't know what a catalyst was before I read the book. So Shannon, do you mind defining what a catalyst is? And maybe Tracy, after, if you can give a little bit of sense of why it would be important to look at catalysts when it comes to talent acquisition, especially on the leadership side.
Yeah. So being a catalyst is really a way of moving through the world. What Tracy and I decided early on was it's not about helping people who raise their hand to be change makers. Like, this is either through nurture or nature who we are. Yeah. For better or worse, and how we move through the world. And some of the common elements are we're dot connectors. So that constant scanning and piecing together information, read a sci-fi book, talk to a customer, read the McKinsey report. And as you're connecting those dots, you start to see, particularly if you're in a large organizational context, the thing that needs to change. And you're seeing that often before other people around you are. If we stopped there, we would call them visionaries. But one of the things that really defines us is this insane need to move into action quickly. And the moving into action actually is part of our iterative process, because we'll see the vision, we'll start to test it with people, we'll get some feedback, and we'll improve the vision. We call that the catalyst formula. As you can hear in that, one of the things that we do, the ways that we move through the world, is we have this experimentation mindset, because often people haven't done what we've done thus far, right? It's hard to write the business case often for the net new thing that we're going to do. Yeah. The final piece is interesting because it's more about how people describe us rather than how we might describe ourselves. Because people look at us and say, oh, well, you're really comfortable with taking risks. And for us, the question or the statement is more, it's risky not to do this thing. There is also a sliding scale, like our comfort with ambiguity. And like, Tracy's a researcher. She loves the data. I'm an ultra catalyst. I move with my gut. And I even have a harder time articulating than others about why we need to do what we do. So there's a range of catalyticness. But overall, that defines us.
Perfect. Tracy, so obviously, talent acquisition is changing dramatically. Yeah. And one of the challenges that we've had is we're not moving quick enough overall as an industry in itself. Mm-hmm. So why would a company want a catalyst being a talent acquisition leader?
Catalysts are the people we want in a time that disruption is happening.
Yes.
And we need to be more agile. We need to be thinking in new ways. We need to be looking beyond the silos that exist in the businesses that we're in to see what other people don't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Shannon's talking about catalysts are the folks that are doing the dot connecting across the abstracts, across the seams. And so they come in with a systems thinking approach to be able to look at, why are we doing things this way? Given the new world and where we need to go, how can we do it better?
So I want to just dive into the book a little bit more. And I'm going to start with the title. Like, we talk about move fast, and then we'll talk about break shit. That's very interesting as well. And then, of course, the burnout piece. But let's zero in a bit on the move fast part.
So one thing about the book title, because not everyone gets this, and I think it's an important distinction, which is the move fast, break shit, burnout is not what we're advocating for. It's how we move through the world. It's what happens to us if we're not intentional about and understand who we are as catalysts. Mm-hmm. And so the book then is the response to the guide to working well. So I just wanted to call that out. We're not advocating for people burning out as an example.
No. It's a self-help book. Correct?
Operating manual. Yes.
Do you know what I found was interesting as I'm reading it? I thought to myself, who would actually pride themselves in moving slowly? Honestly, like, okay, what are the professions that move slowly? And that would be, you know, lawyers, right? They have a vested interest in moving slowly and cautiously, perhaps. Consultants that are paid by the hour, or I don't know if you've ever worked with marketing and creative. They need their time, right? Mm-hmm. Don't make me move fast because it just doesn't work for them. So the race just always seems to be on. So what makes the catalyst so distinct? And you started a little bit when you talked about, well, if you only went to this point, you're a visionary, right? Yeah. Are you talking about somebody can come in and what would take anyone else 2 months, they've got it in 2 hours? Are we talking like that fast?
I'm going to jump in here. So when we work with organizations, we run programs called catalyst programs. And this is where we go in, we help them identify catalysts with attributes that are also going to help them be successful in that cultural context, which is important. But just today, as an example, we're helping one cohort pivot from week 3 to week 4. And they were stuck in a swirl last week. And when you see the readout and what they did, I had to reflect back to them. I was like, you guys have done all of this in 3 weeks. We set the expectation, but they just can't imagine if you give them the skills, the structure, and a little bit of support and that network across the organization, what they can accomplish in just like mind-boggling speed.
I'd love to go back to who wants to be called slow. And I don't know, it's such a good question. And we certainly don't mean to imply that we're trying to call people slow. Because when we first named Catalyst, to be honest, I was nervous that this would be insulting to some people, which is part of what I hear in the question. And so I remember very at first timidly talking about this. And what I often find is that people for whom it doesn't resonate are like, oh, that's not me, but I know that girl. That's my husband. And so it's not necessarily that they would sit and say, I'm slow, as much as they're like, yeah, they move around in a weird pace that seems uncomfortable and I'm not interested in, frankly. So that was really interesting for me in response that way.
Yeah, that is interesting because one of the things that I've noticed with very successful people, entrepreneurs, business leaders, or even leaders in our space, they work at a different pace. And the ones that are very successful have been able to manage that, right? Like they work at a fast pace, but highly organized, highly structured, getting to the right answers, figuring out what's important, what's not important. But it brings me to this day and age. Right now, if you look at the pace of everything, of how we work compared to when I started working 20 years ago, is literally I would get like a fax, maybe not a fax, maybe I'm exaggerating. That's Shelley's time, but in my time,
Jen.
Yeah, I would get a exactly. But you're looking at like Slack, Teams, all of these tools that are made to communicate fast. Being a catalyst could be a big driver of success, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Being a catalyst could be a big driver of success because the idea that disruption is only in certain places has been totally upturned, right? Disruption is everywhere in the wake of the pandemic and the global market chain shifts, et cetera. I'd say, while the tools of technology that you're pointing to certainly support all of us, they can drive catalysts to the equal destruction and distraction as everyone experiences. Everybody needs some time for heads down focus and thought. And those things are really hard for all of us.
Yeah.
Does it support that desire to be able to quickly take a step? Sure. But it's tough. It's tough.
It is really tough, right? Like we're
just
bombarded
one thing
everywhere.
I would say there, though, is that being a catalyst in a large organization historically has been a pretty lonely endeavor. Yeah. Misunderstood, not fitting in the molds. There's a lot of like negative feedback that we might have gotten from organizations. So one way that tools do support people and this whole move to virtual is we can create the connectivity tissue for catalysts across an entire organization. And again, going back to a call we just had today, one of the teams did a check-in about their energy. They're all virtual. We were teaching them to constantly check in on that energy. So the team call, they're like, yeah, we're coming in at a 3 out of 10. And after an hour together in virtual time, just being together with other cattle for an hour had completely changed their energy level. So I do think that there is a special way that cattle can leverage the technology to keep their energy and connectivity going.
Yeah. And it's not always our behaviors in the moment that are the key element of move fast for us. It's the way that we're taking in information and translating that into opportunity and possibility. So it doesn't necessarily have to be quite so literal of, I want to send 3 emails, I have to get on chat. And it goes back to Shelley's question on what makes us distinct, or, you know, are we really seeing it in 2 minutes or 2 hours? There are things that catalysts see that some people will never see. And this was part of what Shannon was sharing, is that being a catalyst is really a way of being. So speed is a piece that we highlight in the title of the book, but it's taking in all that disparate information and filtering it into visions of how the world can be better that literally are not visible to people around you. And that's the thing that can be really jarring for catalysts, because it looks as if there's a spotlight shining on this thing, because when all the information comes together, it feels obvious to us. And you heard that in Shannon saying, to us, it feels riskier not to do it.
I just didn't understand. When Tracy first showed me a thing, the part of that bolt of lightning was like, oh my, like that thing. Oh my God. They don't just not want it. They can't see it.
Well, how frustrating is it for a catalyst to work with non-catalysts, especially a leader? How frustrating is it?
It adds to the burnout, right? And that was, again, I just go back to that moment. Like, I remember where I was sitting, what the weather was like when Tracy told me, because it was so transformational. I didn't understand that my own context was different from them in such a fundamental way. And part of the reason for the book and the class and the work is to help catalysts understand who they are in relationship, because just that knowledge then starts to give us the spaciousness of, they're not trying to be frustratingly slow. They're not trying to obstinately not see the thing. And then once you start to get the tools that we teach in the class, it helps the catalyst bring the other people along on the journey. And there's two dynamics, right? If you're a catalyst with a non-catalytic boss, what that experience is, there's a lot of trauma that happens there, especially again for the unaware catalyst who doesn't understand how they're showing up differently. Alternatively, we work with a lot of catalyst managers. Like, that is not easy. So it's about also helping the catalyst leaders manage better. But I think that's true for any intersectionality, right? The more that we cultivate our own awareness and empathy as a big piece of how we move through the world, it just helps everyone be better and support everyone to be their best selves.
Right? And I think that's especially important when we think about the change part, what needs to change, what needs to be broken or disassembled. And in the book, you talk about the iteration toolbox, the prototype, and the pivot. So while failing or breaking something is good to a catalyst, what do we need to think about when you look at the people around you, maybe others on the team? What are some of the things that we need to bear in mind?
Shannon was touching on this beautifully. And so first of all, from those two words, the break shit, as you grow your awareness as a catalyst, you can see bodies in your wake that were broken accidentally. That with maybe your intensity or your drive, you weren't paying attention. And this connects to your question, Serge, of what does it feel like to be with non-catalysts? It's going to depend on those people's relationship to change.
Yeah.
They don't have to be a catalyst to have a positive relationship to change. And so if people are open and exciting and want to co-create a vision together with you, for a catalyst, that's awesome, because we need non-catalysts to really build the processes and operationalize things in a business. But if you have a set of folks around you that are really resistant, especially that passive resistance, it's super hard. And so we can be breaking shit and not paying attention to where people sit and how they're reacting. And then we end up breaking relationships. And so what we want to do is bring intentionality and choose what we break. And so it's, hey, I'm going to question why we're doing something this way, because I think it's stopping us from achieving a key goal that we're setting in a strategic level. And so can we agree as a group that maybe we want to break this? And can we do this together? Right? That's the right stuff to break. And you're doing it in a way that's respectful of others, bringing them along and not breaking relationships as you go. and to Shannon's point, become very aware in the iteration cycle you're talking about, Shelley, of making sure people are coming with me, because I can iterate so fast and that can be driven by this deep, purpose-filled desire to make the world better. But in organizational context, in a community context, in a societal context, if we don't have a lot of people beginning to work on that change, it's not going to be sticky. And so I have to let go of the constant need of iteration and potentially a strive for perfection to have this begin to have a movement of people coming along with it.
What's interesting, recruitment has not been known to break shit. We've been doing the same thing 20, 40 years, just a little bit better technology, better process. But overall, the experience hasn't changed that dramatically since the 1950s, right? So we have not been known to break shit, but we should. So what's your advice here for that talent acquisition leader that's been a little bit afraid to step out of that box? Like, it's in their head and they might be at a corporation. It's like, can I do it? Am I going to piss off the hiring managers? Because a lot of what we do is working with hiring managers and candidates, and there's an act of persuasion or working with them closely. So how, for that person that's sitting there and be like, I really need to break shit here, this is not working, what's your advice to them? Shannon, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, it's interesting. You had said earlier about some of the roles that have traditionally been known as moving slow. And as a catalyst leader, it's always been super helpful for me actually to find the catalyst in legal and the catalyst in talent acquisition. And if I think about the things that as a business leader, I asked for my HR business partner who helped me with acquisition, it was really doing things differently and doing them fast. Yeah. I have always cultivated for diversity on my team in all of the different forms. And so I would come and challenge. I was like, our pipeline is not going in the right places and we have to shake that up. I need a diverse talent pool yesterday. So it's not just, I need you to go to non-traditional places to source candidates. I need you to move at a completely different speed because the expectation of the organization as a change leader is also different. So if I speak to the talent acquisition people, especially if there's catalyst there, I personally would start to think about where are some of the most catalytic leaders that I can partner with who are going to have the business side vision and requirements that I can start to activate on. And this is what Tracy was talking about before. What we teach catalysts to do, and when you're talking about breaking shit, is you have to be clear about what the guardrails are.
Yeah.
And so my legal partners weren't breaking the law with me, but they were thinking differently about how we could flex IP agreements as an example, right? And so the same is true for HR. Like, how can we get curiosity about how we can speed this process up? How can we find business partners who are going to help us find non-traditional? And maybe we even go all the way to how we write our job description. So I think it's about finding business partners that are excited about moving, having the clarity, and having those business partners help you with the guardrails of what's inbound and what's outbound, and then feed that back into the organization in a way that Tracy said, like, look what we did, look what we learned, and start to bring other people on the journey with you.
I'd encourage folks to, especially if they don't identify as a catalyst, look for the challenges. Identify and frame up the problem spaces and then challenge yourself to like, how could we solve that? When I think of talent acquisition today, right? Retention. What does that look like in the business you're in today? Where are we struggling with that? How might the role we play in this support the business to this global issue we're experiencing? And once you can identify the problem and, as Shannon says, connect into other catalysts, you're going to be breaking the right shit together.
Love it.
Great advice. That is such good advice. Thank you.
I want to jump into the burnout phase of it. And I'm going to make the argument on this podcast that the last 4 years, if you think about any type of role that has experienced the most burnout, I would say HR and talent acquisition would be really big. Because you think about when the pandemic hit, a lot of it fell on HR, making sure that their employees, sending them up virtually, all of this. And obviously, we've gone through the Great Resignation. We've gone through quiet firing. But we've had a lot of leaders and a lot of high-driving leaders just like opt out the last year, being like, I'm done. Like, I can't take any more of this. So how can we avoid burning out? What's your advice there? Tracy, do you want to start with this one?
Yeah. The most important thing for any human when we think about burning out is paying attention to the reality of where we are in terms of our energy.
Yeah.
Sometimes burnout can fall into the category of this mysterious thing that all of a sudden I wake up and I was burned out. Mm. And yet when we look back, there was a path. And if we see the equation of energy out, pandemic, giving my heart, losing people, laying people off, having to find talent when it's impossible, Great Resignation, right? These things hitting the HR and talent community, heart-wrenching, lots of energy out. And so we'll encourage people, the more stressful a moment in your personal or professional life, the more you have to be thinking about the energy in.
Yeah.
So if you imagine you're literally your body, mind, spirit as a bucket, as a living thing, always have things dropping out the bottom of our bucket. We all have a constant hole at the bottom of our bucket. And the more stressed we are, the bigger that hole gets. And so you have to be adding a whole lot more water. And so is that more time alone? Is that more time exercising? Is that more time connecting with people? And each of us have different things that will fill our bucket. So that first piece of advice related to burnout is pay attention and acknowledge and give yourself the permission to say, hey, my bucket's empty. Mm. Look at what's contributing to why it's empty. And then think about how can you fill that up in meaningful ways.
I would just add, I think HR also has a crucial role in helping to change some of that culturally within organizations, which does come back and put more pressure on. I totally acknowledge that. But as we're having conversations with, you know, potential employees, or as we're thinking about how we support existing employees, normalizing the conversation is super important.
And it is really tough, right? There's still a stigma around talking about, hey, I'm burning out. And if you think about like our generations, it's like, there's no way we could have done that early in our career. But the mentality has changed and the openness to it. And even in the last 4 or 5 years have been completely different. There is that willingness to have those discussions. But personally, this is my opinion. I still think the great majority won't share that they're burning out, right? Like they've been trained to just plow through and get things done. And catalysts are probably the most guilty of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
There's an interesting double-edged sword about having that passion and purpose and fire, because it can be sustaining for a really long time until it's not. But then if it's really aligned with your personal purpose and passion, it's hard to say no to and walk away from. So it is something we need to be careful of.
As I listen to you talk, this is fantastic. And we're all thinking, am I a catalyst? So was the book written for self-help for the catalyst, or was it to help those around a catalyst know how to lead them? Who was this written for?
It was absolutely written for the catalyst. We had a really awesome idea in mind that we did not execute, which was we were going to do a double-sided book, one for the catalyst and one for the managers or the people around the catalyst. Mm-hmm. We just made the clear decision, the catalysts need to see themselves first. We need to support them first. And then we start to give them language to talk to their partners and kids and bosses and stuff like that. We are starting to collect the information to help the managers and leaders around Catalyst, help them contextualize why they're so important, that they're not just a pain in the ass. If you give them a little bit of water and sunlight, they can do amazing things.
A lot of organizations need to recruit catalysts, and it can be tough. What do you look for? What are the key things that you should be asking and listening as you're interviewing and trying to attract them to your company? What's your advice there to recruiters as far as what should they listen in and be like, that's probably a catalyst?
And so is this to attract the catalyst, or is this to identify the catalyst?
Let's do both, because we want to attract them. Then when we attract them, we're still not sure. And this is where the interview process goes in.
I'll start with how you attract them. And we did some actually really great research in both of these areas. So Shannon has mentioned several times, catalysts are very purpose driven. And so you need to make sure that whatever it is that you organizationally dream to do in the world is very clear, that it's clearly stated, that it's something that are going to help people get out of bed. They need to see that there's an opportunity for them to come in and solve really interesting problems that matter. So if the business context right now is very much at a stable maintenance phase, then a catalyst is probably not super attracted. They want to come in where there's things that the executive branch is excited to let people really dive into and challenge ideas and beliefs. And related to that, if there's a culture where being able to ask questions, to be curious, to challenge is not allowed, then catalysts will be like, oh, that just feels bad to walk in the door. And so that openness to curiosity and to questions is going to be really key. That growth mindset has become so common in organizations today is going to be really important for that.
Mm-hmm.
The dedication to self-awareness of leadership is going to be another really good one. Because Shannon mentioned, and this will be much more for your very aware catalysts. Shannon mentioned that she didn't use the word trauma in particular, but she was hinting at it, that a lot of our trauma can come from working for managers who really don't understand us and can actually begin to sabotage us. And so making sure that you have a leader that is really open to these discussions, that's going to have your back, that's showing you that there is open to their development and invested in yours as you are coming in is going to be really key. And that's not the culture of all organizations.
We have a vision of having the top 100 catalyst friendly places to work. And I think increasingly this is going to be top talent that companies are going to recognize that they need to start tapping into. So if you're listening, the race is on. We're here to help you identify your catalyst. If you're asking the questions, there's a couple of things. Like in an interview one time, someone was like, you jumped around a lot. In the Bay Area, I stayed in jobs for 8 years in two different places. And like in the Bay Area, that's an insanely long time. But so one of the key things may be you see that they've had either multiple roles in one organization or they've gone to a number of different organizations. So as an interviewer, I would want to understand the why. And some of the hints will be like, I went in, I saw the thing, I did the thing, it was done, and I was ready to move on to another problem, whether that was a role within the company or a different one. When we help organizations actually identify and have an application across the organization, some of the questions in the application are things like, tell me about a time that you had a vision and created change. Tell me about a time that you failed. What were your learnings from some of those things? So to Tracy's point, you're starting to identify some of the growth mindset and the scale. This isn't just like I took an Excel spreadsheet and optimized it better. It's like I was connecting dots across multiple disciplines so that I could be a better change agent. And then the other thing that sort of is a cautionary tale, but you can use to your advantage if you are working smartly with leaders is catalysts will follow those leaders that Tracy said, get them. I followed him through multiple organizations because, and I didn't know it at the time. I didn't understand it. I knew that he supported me, but he saw in me the things that I was bringing to the table as a catalyst. And so if you don't have those leaders who are capable of seeing and supporting the catalyst, find them and cultivate them because they will leave with that leader once they're gone.
I was just going to say, I applaud the idea of the top 100 list, because if we look at job postings, and I do all day long, having a growth mindset is very on trend. But do they really mean it?
That's it.
They ask for it. Oh, stay curious. It's very on trend. But I know very few organizations want you. They want rule followers. They want people who are going to be doers and get the work done. Yet we're asking, like the job postings are asking for it. I think you've given us just such great advice of what to really listen for from the leaders. And you know, if you're an in-house recruiter, if that organization really does welcome being questioned.
It's a good point, Shelley, because for the talent acquisition people, like don't set people up for failure, right? The org really doesn't want it, even though the JD says that's what they want. Be the filter that saves everyone the time and pain, right? Conversely, we do a lot of coaching with people because catalysts do go through job transitions, but they're looking for this nirvana. You know what catalysts will say to you? they will say, and this has defined my whole career, they will say, I want to work with awesome people on wicked good problems with the support that I need to get shit done. So if you can provide that to Catalyst, we're like, we're in, but you have to mean it.
You mentioned something in there that I think is very topical in talent acquisition. And you talked about people moving jobs every couple of years or having multiple jobs within that one company. And unfortunately, that is seen as a very negative thing in the world of talent acquisition, not for recruiters, a lot for hiring managers. And it's one that I get challenged all the time as I'm recruiting. They'll be like, well, they've had 5 jobs in the last 12 years. I don't see it as a negative because the ability of skills that you can get within different organizations usually sets you up for success. But what would you say to that hiring manager that's like, yeah, they've had 4 jobs and they're staying 3 years, like they're a job hopper. How can you help us convince that hiring manager that this is not a bad thing?
Absolutely. If you know you need someone to support you through disruption, you're only going to be able to keep that person engaged and happy as long as there's a juicy problem to be solved. If the catalyst is still having to try to solve that same problem after 2 years, I'm questioning what's going on in the business, right? And so either the business has to be prepared to move people, or the catalyst is going to say, we have done an amazing job. Thank you for having me. And now I'm going to go take the talent skill I have and apply that somewhere else. You don't want to keep a catalyst in a place that's in maintenance.
Yeah.
It's unhappy for everybody. So to hiring managers, if you need these people, if this is the moment you need them, check their references. Right? If their past jobs say, oh my gosh, we couldn't have gotten to where we are. We couldn't have seen the innovative solution. And they helped build the vision, bring people along, get it started, hired the right people to really make it stick. And we are better exponentially today because of it. It doesn't matter that they only stayed 2 years.
Round of applause. Great advice because it is a big challenge for us with hiring managers for sure. So, we love Shannon Lucas and Tracy Lovejoy. We want the audience to be able to find you. Shannon, what's the easiest way for someone to get a hold of you?
Definitely go to the website, catalystconstellations.com. All the juicy stuff is there, including a link to the book and our podcast too.
Yes, please do check out the podcast. It's really interesting. And a mutual friend of ours introduced me to this whole catalyst world, and I really appreciate Jason for doing that.
Thanks,
Tracy. Jason, what's the best way for someone to get a hold of you?
Same thing, up on the website and connect with us on LinkedIn. We're both up there. Shannon Lucas, Tracy Lovejoy.
So the book, and I want to give the top of the title because we always forget this one, The Catalyst Guide to Working Well, Move Fast, Break Shit, Burn Out. Check it out. It's available everywhere. I'm sure you can get it on a website, Amazon, all the other players. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So fun.
Thank you both. It's been a joy for us too.
Au revoir.
Shelley, let's face it. Texting candidates is the easiest way to hire quicker today. But your cell phone doesn't connect to your ATS. You're sharing your personal number with strangers. That's pretty scary, right, Shelley? And it's not even legally compliant.
This is where our friends at RecText come in. They've created simple yet powerful text recruiting software that works with your ATS. Plus, it's designed by recruiters for recruiters, so you know it works. To learn more and book a demo, visit www.rectxt.com. Mention the Recruitment Flex and get 10% off annual plans.
Do you love news about LinkedIn, Indeed, Google, and just about every other recruitment tech company out there?
Hell yeah. I'm Chad.
I'm Cheese.
We're the Chad and Cheese Podcast.
All the latest recruiting news and insights are on our show.
Dripping in snark and attitude.
Subscribe today wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We out.